Episode 116, The Fandom Menace.
Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian, bringing you theology at warp speed. I'm Matt Anderson.
Pow! I am Ben DiBono. We are back.
Back for another,
once again,
main topic episode all about fandom. If it's good or if it's bad. But before we go to that, Ben, in my hand, I have a magazine that I thought would make more noise on the air.
Just got to shake it a little bit better.
Picking anything.
There we go.
Magazine.
We should just have a paper making sound effect.
Yeah, you're right. Because right after we stopped recording the last episode about news, I said, I literally had it under my microphone, a list of the top 50 movies of 2012, but this is box office top 50. So you started reading through the list, Ben, and you were just saying words and responding, go.
Yeah, it's Avengers number one, overrated.
No, not overrated. Totally. I have a plane overrated. Right over there for its non-overratedness.
It's way overrated.
It makes me happy.
Well, so do a lot of things that are overrated.
Next.
I mean, cocaine's probably overrated, but it makes people happy.
Okay, next.
Maybe a bad comparison.
Probably.
Number two is Dark Knight Rises.
That's worth it.
Amazing movie. Love it. Number three is The Hunger Games.
That's right. And I told you,
I asked you what you thought of The Hunger Games. I declared it overrated.
Yeah, and I said I really liked the book, and I thought the movie was pretty good, but it was actually important to the story of me and Dez.
Yeah. Dez.
My fiance.
I like to, make sure we're catching any new listeners.
Yeah, so what happened is, we knew each other. We had gone to Bible study together, but we weren't really outside of Bible study friends.
Yeah.
But then I had tweeted something out about being at the Hunger Games movie. In fact, if you have read Hunger Games, my exact tweet was, "May the odds be ever in your favor."
Yeah.
Which is a line from the book. And so that's as I was waiting for the movie to start. And she actually replied to my tweet.
Oh, wow.
Yes, which was a pretty big deal.
It's like, that book sucks.
No, she actually really, liked it. And ripped off what?
Stephen King.
I don't think that's true.
It is true.
How did it rip off Stephen King?
Long Walk, Running Man.
The Hunger Games?
Yeah.
Oh.
Total rip.
Anyways, but what I didn't know, well, there's kind of a whole behind-the-scenes story where she didn't know if she should reply because we didn't really know each other that well, and her sister was like, yeah, do it. And so they were kind of like fighting over it. And but if it hadn't been for that tweet back and forth, that's how we first started becoming friends, kind of.
So
where we first became comfortable talking to each other. So that night I Facebooked her about the movie, and we talked through Facebook a little bit. So then when we're seeing each other at Bible study, it's kind of like, yeah, we're a little bit better friends than just like that person over there who I don't know as well.
So when Catching Fire comes out, my wife's a big fan.
Oh,
she'll be your wife at that time.
Yes, she will be.
So we should have double date and do a video review with the Sci-Fi Christian
wives.
That's
a great idea, because Catching Fire is my favorite book in the series, and it's Dez's favorite book in the series.
I have not read any of the books.
And the night that I was Facebooking and doing Twitter with her, I had actually said November 2013, Catching Fire. Like, we were talking about it back then. So,
November 2013, double date.
Yeah, let's do it. So even though Hunger Games isn't necessarily my favorite movie, it actually means something to my heart.
Well, that's good.
Very romantic. I'm a sci-fi Christian.
A little bit of sci-fi romance.
I'm a new Matt.
You are.
The world is brighter. I'm happier.
You're happier with
God's plan for my life.
That is an awesome way to put it.
But life is good.
Let's talk about our contest.
Oh,
before we forget yet again.
Yeah, we forgot the last
Mike.
Episode.
Sorry, well, we did mention a little.
I mentioned it on the Aquaman episode.
Okay,
good. So, do you want to take it? Go ahead.
Oh, we're having
a
contest?
You have the page open, right?
I don't.
Okay.
I might.
I'll load it while you talk.
I have the page open.
Take it away.
Okay, we are having a contest. And the contest is, should I just read straight from the page?
Why not?
So this is the words of our esteemed writer, Mike Poteet. J.R.R. Tolkien and C.S. Lewis were both scholars of language and literature, Oxford professors, Christians, and friends. They might both be considered the original sci-fi Christians, since both men used their considerable literary talent to create works of fantasy that witness in different but real ways to God. But for all they had in common, Lewis and Tolkien never wrote a book together. They planned to, but it would have been a non-fiction volume, Language and Human Nature. No doubt it would have been an impressive tome, but it wouldn't have been what both men seemed to love best, a story. That's where the Sci-Fi Christians contest comes in. Describe in 75 words or less the joint novel J.R.R. Tolkien and C.S. Lewis never wrote. And then the prizes that you can win are one of three books written by author Sarah Arthur and autographed by her.
Yes.
They are called Walking with Frodo, A Devotional Journey Through Lord of the Rings, Walking with Bilbo, Devotional for the Hobbit, and Through the Wardrobe, A Devotional Quest Through the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. So how to enter? Be sure you have liked the Sci-Fi Christian on Facebook.
That's required.
Yep. Submit your entry as an attachment, plain text or Microsoft Word, to a message sent via the Sci-Fi Christian Facebook page. So, enter soon. Deadline is March 1st.
Yes, so it is today, February 4th, as we record.
Yes.
So, time is ticking away.
Yeah.
And so you can send your entries. As always, you can always send any sort of feedback to feedback@thescifichristian.com.
Yeah.
You can also... just in general for feedback, you can call us at 612-4121-SFC. But I think for this contest, they have to submit it by Facebook message to the Sci-Fi Christian, because that proves to us that you actually have liked us on Facebook.
Yes.
So is that what it says at the bottom? Something.
Yep. And if for some reason you're having trouble doing that, just submit it somehow, because we want more entries.
What? Yeah. So be sure you... Yeah. Did you read this? I might have missed it. If you said, only entries who have liked the Sci-Fi Christian will be eligible. You have to do it through the Sci-Fi Christian. You have to message us via Sci-Fi Christian's Facebook page.
Yes.
Okay. Great. Submit your entries as attachments in Microsoft Word format.
All right.
One last thing before we go to the main topic. I don't think this is exactly sci-fi related, but I just want to bring it up. Netflix, just this last week, released their... first ever original programming, House of Cards, starring Kevin Spacey.
Yeah, it looks really good. I haven't watched it.
It looks interesting. It's a remake of a BBC show from like 1990, I believe.
Yeah. And we all know the BBC rules the world.
So it's not there. It's different than regular television. Netflix isn't releasing one episode a week. They've already released all 13 episodes of the first season at once.
Yeah.
What do you think about this method of storytelling and like TV viewing?
I think it's really interesting because... you know, most TV shows are forced into a particular structure because they want you to come back the next week. Well, they don't have to necessarily do that now.
Yeah.
You know, you can focus on more just how can we tell the best possible episode without keeping people's interest for an entire week.
So, this came out as 13 episodes, which is kind of a typical shorter season.
Yay!
So,
another victory for me.
It used to be 25, and now 13 is more popular, even 10 sometimes.
Yeah.
But with this structure or with this format, they could do any length, however many episodes it takes to tell your story.
And that has been my point all along. Let the length of the season be dictated by the size of your story, not the other way around.
So why do you think they chose 13? For DVD reasons?
Probably.
Because they'll be able to release on DVD. I think the rule is, this can't be true. When Dollhouse was coming out, I remember they had to produce a 13th episode so that they could release it on DVD. But Game of Thrones, for example, only has 10 episodes.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the exact ruling is on that.
Oh, but it's probably just it's kind of a common... if you think of, like... I think that's a standard season size for something like Mad Men or Breaking Bad or kind of your... not HBO, but your other cable networks. Mm-hmm. That seems to be about the standard season size. So I imagine that that's kind of what they're aiming for, is that demographic. They're not going for the premium HBO Showtime content. They're not going for network content. They're kind of positioning themselves as a rival to AMC, FX, channels like that.
So do you think this is going to be successful? Are we going to see other shows?
I hope so. Like this? You know, again, I haven't watched it, so we can't comment on the quality. But I hope it's successful because I think it's a really interesting format and could introduce some. There could be some series that would not work in normal TV because of the structure that could work really well with something like this.
If people want to, so just like HBO, you have to, like, for you bought HBO, so that you could watch Game of Thrones, so if somebody wants to watch a show, they have to purchase Netflix. But whereas for you had to hold on to HBO for at least 10 weeks, these people could binge watch this whole season in a week, and then stop
just
it
cancel.
So how are they going to keep people coming back? How is this going to be profitable?
Well, I think that, you know, you pay for Netflix by the month. So you get it for a week, you plow through this, and you think, oh, I got it for a few more weeks. Let me see what else is on. And by that point, you're hooked on something that has 5,000 episodes, and you just can't stop watching Hoarders and which that is a messed up show.
Do you watch it ever?
I've watched it several times.
Really? On Netflix?
Yeah.
Why do you guys watch that of all the shows available?
I usually watch it by myself. Like, I'll just turn it on while I'm working or something like that. Because it's so... It's not a good thing to watch because it's very exploitive.
Yeah.
But it's so, like, freak show. You know? So I watch that one sometimes. I also watch sometimes... I'm not proud to be admitting this, but I also watch sometimes My Strange Addiction.
I've never heard of that show. It's so hysterical. I don't have cable, so I don't know about a lot of shows.
It's on Netflix.
Yeah.
And... So, like, the one I was watching a couple of weeks ago had this lady who was addicted to eating rocks.
What?
And she would drive 2 hours to find the rocks that she liked the best.
No.
Yes, dead serious. And, you know, then there's this other lady who's carrying around a pillow that she's never washed since 1980.
Oh, my God.
It was disgusting. And, yeah, and then there was a guy who was in a committed physical relationship with his car. That was wild.
Wow.
Yeah, you saw him, like, under the hood kissing it, and it was just messed up.
So, I mean, in other news, I'm really excited about our contest. Just to change the subject drastically.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
So, I can't wait for this contest.
So, don't watch My Strange Addiction or Hoarders. You'll be a better person if you don't.
What people need to get their stories in soon, because you know, when you start reading some of the early ones, you start to already pick who are your favorites.
Yeah.
And so, if you come in at, like, the end of the month, we're going to be kind of be like, well, we already know who's going to win. So,
exactly.
Don't screw it up. Send it now.
Yeah.
To feedback at thesci-fi-christian.com. Nope. Don't do that. Do Facebook. Like us on Facebook.
Unless you can't figure out Facebook. Yeah. Just get it to us one way or another.
Hey, Ben.
But just make sure you have liked. I think the real requirement is having liked the Facebook page.
Ben, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you a quick play-by-play. I'm going to hit the main topic music.
All right.
I want you to intro it. Meanwhile, I'm going to be secretly standing up, walking away from the table, and going to put that food, the chicken that I was eating during the last episode, needs to be put away so I can eat more later. I don't want it to go bad.
Right.
So let's do it. Like, while I'm away, pretend like I'm still sitting here. Kind of talk to me.
Okay.
And they won't even know I'm gone.
Yeah. So we're going to do that. We're going to do main topic, and then I have
story time.
Story time.
All right. Well, here we go. Main topic.
So this week, Matt is getting distracted watching the old-time Hardee's ads on the TV with the cartoons that I'm watching. This week, our topic is kind of an amalgamation. That was fast, Matt.
Yeah.
That was lightning fast.
Oh, I know. Well,
I didn't even get through my intro yet.
They don't even know we're away.
Yeah,
I'm away.
That's true. Kind of an amalgamation.
The last 2 weeks, I've talked about myself in plural.
Yeah.
Or at least it was like
you're suggesting to married mode.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Maybe
we Andersons do it this way.
Okay. Cool.
Do you have some family rules that you've been thinking about?
Like, give me an example. I don't know.
You're a man of the house. Like,
oh, like things I'm going to make her do.
Yeah.
Like
women have to wash the dishes.
Yeah. No, I don't know. We haven't really talked through some of those things yet. I've been okay. I know we're in the middle of introing the main topic, but this is for real.
I was butchering it, so I'm glad that. We're talking about this instead.
This is for real. I'm going to get married in August. That's like 7 months away.
Six
months away.
5 days.
I need... Since, I mean, the listeners should be all Christians, likely. I mean, not that they have to be. Yeah. But likely, if you're listening to the Sci-Fi Christian, you share a belief system with me and Ben. Ben and I. This is what I want. I want some marriage advice, people. Yeah. I want you guys to send me some things I need to be thinking about right now so that... I can be well prepared to be an awesome husband.
All right.
A godly husband.
Yeah.
Ben, I want you to start right now. Give me some advice.
Well, I don't like doing laundry, so my wife's always done that.
That's your advice?
No, like, you know, I think that it's important to realize that no matter how close your relationship is, when you start living together, there will be an adjustment phase, and that can be a little tricky, so just be prepared to... You know, go through some changes, and it's going to be a happy/stressful time after you first get married.
So the first year?
It can be, yeah.
Some people say first year is hard, second year, or first 2 years are hard. What is it?
For us, yeah, I think the first year was a little tough.
So, listeners, write me at matt@thesci-fi-christian.com. I want all your Christian-y marriage advice possible.
Yeah.
If you know a book that I should read, send it to me. If you want
five love languages.
If you want me to watch some movie like... Fireproof?
Oh, don't watch that movie. It's so stupid.
Let me know. But mostly advice.
The basic message of Fireproof is don't look at porn, which, thank you. Now we've got that out of the way, we can move on to something else.
I've got a question.
Yes.
Should we have an episode of the Sci-Fi Christian that is all marriage advice?
We should, because I can prep some stuff better than make her do laundry.
Okay, yeah. So, but I'm talking about, we'll do it. So you now have, you know, some time to send this right away. So we'll try to get this marriage advice episode out sometime, and that will be pretty different.
Well, speaking of marriage advice, so last night at the Super Bowl, you know, I was joking around with the other guys. I was like, yeah, I've got my wife so well trained. She just will go get me a beer.
You were saying that?
Yeah, we were just joking. And I was like, no, I'm just kidding, sweetie. I'll go up and get it. I don't mind. It's a trap. So after I made that joke, she's like, I don't mind.
Yeah.
I'll go up and get it for her. So she went up and got me a beer. So that was nice.
So what's the point of that? Sorry, just that she's nice?
But I like it when my wife goes and gets me beer.
And Annie is super nice.
She is.
Great mother.
Yes.
Great with your two children.
Yes.
Owen and Ellie.
Yes.
Who I haven't seen since August?
When, I don't know.
When was the last time I saw you at church?
Well, probably a long time ago. What does that sound?
What sound? Everything's fine.
Right. My cartoons are done.
The tape stops.
Oh, crap. Anyway, get back to fandom?
Can I just start this over? I mean, I feel like, let's just start the whole episode over.
Really?
No, I'm just going to start this part over.
Yeah, because we're quite a ways into it now.
Just this part. You don't know what to do without me.
I don't.
Fandom. Ben has, I believe this is, his position is going to be mostly negative. We haven't talked about this.
But
I told Ben ahead of time, I'm prepared to be the devil's advocate against your negativeness. But then I actually kind of twisted it and said the angel's advocate, because you'd be evil and I'd be
bad. I'm kind of a devil.
Yeah, a little devil. And so, anyways, Ben, I want now kind of give us an outline of where we're going to go in this conversation, and then I'll keep you on track.
Well, fandom is a very interesting phenomena for me. And so part of this is going to be, you know, we are going to get into some of the reasons why I've been so negative on the Avengers and all that. We'll get to some of that. So there will be a bit of negativity. But rather than it being all negative or, you know, debate or all that, so I know people love it when we fight. So we'll try and fight a little for you guys.
Okay. You know, I had somebody, though, say that they had to stop listening to one of our news episodes because they felt like we were being too negative.
I'm against you, whoever you are.
I know who it is.
But
I'm not gonna say his name because he's my friend.
Who's the dude that I'm trying to woo? Is that Andre?
Andre.
Hey, Andre.
Yeah.
Just say hi.
Okay. The guy who hated you on the show.
I know.
Yeah.
We haven't heard from you for a while, dude. So
and we've been talking about you like all the time.
But he is like 7 months behind or something. So I'm sure he'll catch up eventually. But anyway, I'm far more interested, rather than saying is it good or bad, then we'll get to some of that, in terms of just asking the question, what is fandom and what's its appeal and how does it fit into how stories have been historically understood and enjoyed. So I thought where we could start, where I started anyway, was thinking of what categories have stories generally fit into in terms of how we enjoy them and what we get out of them and their purpose. So kind of laying out that as maybe a historical question and then asking how does fandom fit in alongside that?
I like it. That sounds like a good place to go.
Okay. So
why don't you lead this?
I have 5 types of stories that I would not consider an exhaustive list, but I think that if we look at what is the purpose of different stories, we could fit most stories into one of these categories or some combination thereof. So let's kick this off.
Wait, what? I have my own music.
This isn't a top 5.
What is this song going to be?
Welcome to the Ben DiBono Countdown on the Sci-Fi.
Remember, I actually gave you one of your very own.
Did you?
Yeah, it was super nice of you.
Sorry.
You should have told me.
I'll play that one.
Okay, you talk for a second and I'll find it.
Okay. Well, I don't have anything else to say.
You should have told me, because last week, if you would have listened to our episode, you would have known that, and you were on it, so this is weird that you don't know this.
We recorded one.
I have like 4 versions of
of
the clips now, so we're going to have one that's like of just you and me, one that's of like, I just realized this is like the worst thing to wait around for. Let's just go with yours. Play it again.
Yeah. So the first story type that I have is mythology.
Hmm.
Mythology stories focus on answering the big questions of the human experience. why are we here? Why do certain things happen? What is this distinctive? What is the origin of this distinctive aspect of our culture or humanity or whatever?
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and some obvious examples of this would be stuff like the Iliad and the Odyssey, Beowulf, more recently Tolkien, stuff that is intentionally trying to answer the big cosmic questions of good and evil, or even just origin. Or in the case of Beowulf, what you have in the finalized text that we possess is kind of a transition text of a pagan culture and what probably originally began as a pagan text. And then as those cultures became Christianized, the transition that culture went through in terms of leaving behind pagan symbols and pagan mythology and transitioning into Christianity. And I think what you have in Beowulf is a mythological attempt to deal with some of that transition. In terms of how do we process that, especially if you dig into Beowulf, you see a very strong mixture of pagan and Christian symbols in there.
That's pretty interesting.
And so mythology is trying to answer the big questions.
I like it. And mythology is something that you specifically have really studied, as we mentioned this on a previous episode, but it ties in with when you were studying masculinity and being a godly man. There's a lot to the mythology aspect that is built into us.
Yeah, it's really trying to get at core questions of the human existence through a story. So, you know, mythology can obviously take on a number of different genres, but I think obviously because of its kind of cosmic appeal, the stories tend to be grandiose and really lends itself to sci-fi fantasy in the modern context. That's why even like you look at something like Iliad or the Odyssey, they do very much have a sci-fi feel to them with the gods and battling and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would say that all of these different story types in terms of their purpose can be cross-genre. Mythology especially tends to focus on big, grandiose, cosmic-type stories, which sci-fi and fantasy lends itself to quite well.
I mean, that sounds pretty good. And before we go a minute further,
yes,
I think it's fair that we would play.
There we go. Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian Countdown.
I'm the Sci-Fi Christian,
possibly featuring Ben DiBono. That was one of the outtakes, wasn't it?
Kind of, but I mean...
Are we getting another one?
Not on purpose.
Okay.
So, no, I think that one's pretty good.
Very good. The next type of story number that I have for you.
Do you want me... Are you counting down or...
I don't care.
Number two.
Allegory. So, stories that are parabolic in nature. They're seeking to teach a specific lesson through their characters, oftentimes through a one-to-one correspondence. But these are stories where their purpose is to communicate a specific set of morals or a specific story. I think we oftentimes obviously think of this in terms of religion, but it doesn't have to be. You know, I think something like Aesop's Fables, if you remember those, Matt, from your childhood,
yes,
would probably fit. Maybe not perfectly, but would fit loosely into this category in the sense that they're trying to communicate a specific moral. All the characters, all the circumstances in the stories are designed to communicate a certain message.
And would you also count in here C.S. Lewis's kind of fake allegory, which he calls starts with an S. Supposition? No. Was it? You know what talking about? We talked about this on the third episode.
Yeah, maybe. I've been really thinking about this as I've been reading my daughter, Lewis, because I think that, you know, Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe seems pretty heavy allegory. But I think the Narnia series as a whole, it would kind of be a mix between allegory and mythology in terms of its approach, especially as you get into the later books. The allegory tends to slip away a little bit. Maybe a bit more in Last Battle, The Magician's Nephew, but it tends to slip away a bit and focuses more on mythology of communicating big ideas of human questions through a grandiose narrative. So I'd put it kind of between those first two.
I can't even say this word. Substantial.
Yes.
I can't say that. Why am I having trouble pronouncing this? I feel like I'm off on this episode.
That's okay.
Read this word.
It's upside down.
Suppositional.
Yeah.
So weird. Suppositional. Something's wrong with me.
That's okay.
Number three.
So obviously, Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe would be one example of that. Maybe not the Narnia series as a whole, but also something like Pilgrim's Progress, which, you know, really has no narrative in it outside of the allegory. Everything is allegory in that story.
Suppositional.
Yes. So number three. Thematic narrative.
Thematic narrative.
This is where a story seeks to explore a certain theme or set of themes through the use of characters and story. So in other words, where mythology is these big questions of humanity, and we're trying to answer specific questions. Where do we come from? Why did this happen? Blah, 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 blah. Allegory is attempting to answer, you know, or it's not trying to answer questions so much as it is trying to communicate something very specific to us. This moral, this truth, this story. Thematic, it's going to take a certain theme of the human existence or life or culture or history or something like that, and really explore it through the use of the characters, the genre, the setting, the, you know, all the different parts of a story. So some examples of this would be, I think one of the best recent examples is Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy, where you do have a story, but there's certain major, major themes that come out in each one of those. You know, Batman Begins is
All about fear. And conquering fear.
Yes, and then, you know, Dark Knights is kind of
escalation,
a bit of postmodernism in terms of what happens when everything, you know, gets turned on its head, and how much can we really believe about, you know, this or that. You know, you could also say, as some people have argued, that it's a thematic exploration of the war on terror.
I don't think that's true.
Nolan's denied it, but, you know, it's an interesting reading of the story, you know. And Dark Knight Rises, obviously, hope, defeat, terror, you know, different types of evil we've talked about. So there's a lot of different themes present in Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy. Another recent example would be Les Miserables.
Oh, love where, that.
Yeah, you know, we could rattle off 10, 12, 15 themes just right off the top of our head without thinking about it. You know, it's so thematically rich. And it's not an allegory, it's not a mythology, but the entire purpose of the story is to explore the different themes through the characters and whatnot.
Good. Number four.
The philosophical or political story, which seeks to develop a philosophical or political system or position through the character, setting, etc.
So is this different than social commentary?
No, I think social commentary could be in there.
Or satire?
Satire could be in there. Satire could also develop in terms of allegory, depending on how close your satire is. Yeah. It could also be a thematic story. But here I'm thinking of something more like Philip K. Dick's stuff, where it's very much exploring his ideas of what reality is and what is real. Or, you know, very bluntly, Ayn Rand's, you know, Atlas Shrugged, The Fountainhead. They're not allegory, but they have a specific political or philosophical position that they're trying to communicate. 1984, Animal Farm, that would be maybe a bit more allegorical, but still, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Political position.
And number five.
Number five would be the visceral story. Pure entertainment and amusement. It has no other goal.
You're saying this with disdain.
I am.
You can't help yourself.
I am. I'm not a fan of this.
This is what people would call a popcorn movie.
Yes. You know, it doesn't seek thematic depth. It provides its audience with a thrilling, exciting, diverting experience. This is the stuff where you can turn your brain off, see all of CBS's lineup in terms of their shows.
That's funny.
I mean, that's what happens during football season, as I see all these ads for, like, NCIS, NCIS, Des Moines, NCIS. You know, they've got so many of these, and they're just so idiotic.
Yeah. I do hate those shows.
Yeah. But even something like Michael Bay's Transformers, that's probably a not popular example. But something, I don't want to say the Avengers, because I want to talk about that more later.
Are you going to get into your big essay that you almost wrote?
Yeah.
Because that's what I want to hear.
We're going to get there. So, but something, it doesn't imply bad. I want to make that clear. There are some very well done movies that are just entertainment. Mm-hmm. Something like, have you ever seen Die Hard?
Yes.
So Die Hard would probably be a good example of this.
So what, that you think it's...
We could mine it for some themes, you know, but they're not... The point of isn't to develop its themes. They're there a little bit, but it's far more about just entertaining. It's extraordinarily well done. I love the movie. So again, this isn't saying that anything that falls into this category is bad, despite the general disdain that I have for it.
Are you going to see Die Hard 5 on Valentine's Day with Annie?
No.
Okay.
I'm not going to see it at all.
Just curious.
Yeah. But obviously, there's, you know, as it's gone on, it's gotten less and less well done and less and less.
And I think that will bring up that kind of thing, too. I want to talk about some of that stuff, the sequel.
Yes.
phenomenon.
So, and that kind of brings us to this question of fandom. I would argue that all five of those, I don't want to call them genres, but story types, for lack of a better term. I kind of need to invent my own term, I think, for this theory.
Yeah, you should. That's a good idea.
So we'll work on that.
Okay.
Because it deserves more thought than this is Ben literary theory
okay. Here.
So all five of those story types, I think, are fairly historical. You know, obviously visceral stuff has become more popular through Hollywood, through entertainment. But you go back through time, you look at the history of stories, you know, you can find all five of those popping up again and again and again and again in different forms and to different extents. In the 20th century, especially the later half of the 20th century, there's some earlier examples of it, but later half 20th century, we have this curious phenomenon called fandom.
Fandom, which comes from the word fan or fanatic and the suffix dom, as in kingdom.
Yes.
Okay, sorry.
Oh, that's good. And it doesn't really fit neatly into any of these categories.
Fandom, a term used to refer to a subculture composed of fans, characterized by a feeling of sympathy and camaraderie with others who share a common interest.
Thank you, Wikipedia.
How did you know?
Because I read that page last night.
Okay.
Yes, we have this. If the point of my story types, my five story types, is to say these are different ways that people enjoy stories.
Okay.
Is for, you know, or maybe not necessarily enjoy, but these are five reasons why people read stories. Mm-hmm. Is for one of these five generally. And fandom's kind of the new kid on the block. It will cross over with some of these five.
Okay.
At certain times. Obviously.
So you're saying fandom is a type of story?
Almost. I'm not quite sure where to put it. It exists alongside.
But you're saying that because people like demand more and more, and that the stories are being basically developed just to cater to these fans?
Yes. Here's what I wrote down. Fandom seeks to provide fans of a story with personal investment in the world of the story. In this sense, its goals are entirely distinct from any of the five categories mentioned. Fandom can also become a sixth category when stories are written for the purpose of perpetuating or exploring a specific fan world.
Oh.
In other words, sometimes, you know, in certain extreme types of fandom, it isn't even a visceral experience that's sought. It's not even entertainment. It's simply we want to have more in our fan world. And so it's not about mythology. It's not about answering big questions. It's not about communicating a specific truth, exploring themes, putting forth a political position, or even making something that's entertaining and diverting. It's about the investment in the world itself.
Interesting. And so, and I think the listeners probably know this, but we got to this episode that we're doing right now through a lot of the sci-fi news we've been covering with things such as Avengers and all the Marvel movies and the Star Wars movies, and how they're saying they're going to have, yes, episodes 7, 8, 9, but also these spin-off, other standalone movies that are in the same universe, but are by themselves. You don't have to watch 7, 8, and 9 to know what's going on there.
Yes.
And so, and then Justice League is maybe coming out. And so you have been saying that you're against these different things. You hate, hate.
But let me back up before, you know, I completely condemn them.
Okay.
Because that was part of the impetus for this episode.
Yeah, that's how we got here.
Here's the other part of it, though. And I don't know if I've told you this story.
Okay.
So we talked about how the Last Wheel of Time book came out a month ago.
Number 14, right?
Yes, number 14. Yeah, okay. Number 14. So I was sitting down and reading it, and I was loving it and having the time of my life. You know, it was great, great fun to read this story and feel finished after 13 years since I started.
So tell a little bit more about that, just for the people that don't know. So you've been reading this since you were how old?
14.
Okay.
14. So I read the first book when I was 14. There's people who have been reading it since 1990 when the first book came out. So, you know, pretty much a lot of us have been reading this story for a long, long, long time. You know, lots of investment, lots of hours rereading, participating in online communities, you know, reading different theories people have, all this stuff. So I'm about halfway through the book, and I start thinking to myself, because I am fascinated by this question of why do people enjoy stories. I find that an absolutely fascinating question, and I like to ask it of myself. So I started asking myself, why am I enjoying this story? And so I was having trouble coming up with an answer because I was really, really enjoying it. But if I'm to be perfectly honest, there are some serious flaws in the series.
Okay.
There are some themes that are rich and deep, but they're nothing that hasn't been explored by 100 other stories in different ways, and at times even better ways. So while the themes are there, I can't claim that that has such a draw on me. It is enormously entertaining at times, but it also is enormously boring at times. You know, there are parts of the series that are just not well written at all. Some of the characters absolutely drive me nuts. So I could say kind of the thematic story, kind of the visceral entertaining story, both of those have it. But that doesn't explain why somebody who's as grumpy as me about stories is having the time of my life reading this. And I realized I'm enjoying this on the level of fandom, which completely transcends any of the other ways I think about stories. And it doesn't make sense to me why I would enjoy this, but it's because of this personal investment I have in the world of the story. That's what I was enjoying, was not the story itself, though that was decent. I mean, the last book was well enough written, but it wasn't great. You know, if I was to critique the writing style, 2.5, 3 stars or something like that, it was my investment in the world. That's what I loved in the final volume.
That's pretty interesting. Okay, so, and then at that point, it does become its own category.
It does. Because my investment isn't, you know, it's not that, oh, he's making such a moving, deep point about this. The way I feel like with something like Dark Knight Rises or Dark Knight, you know, they're enormously entertaining. But you can also have a long philosophical conversation about the things Nolan's saying in those movies. None of that here. I mean, there's some things where it's like, yeah, that's an interesting point. Move on. You know? And, yeah, this is kind of entertaining, but I don't really like long battle scenes, which this book had a ton of. You know, they get boring to me, but yet I'm very invested in this.
Yeah.
Fandom. It's pure fandom.
I actually like that explanation more than you just hating more movies.
Yes.
Okay, interesting. So yeah, I think that example proves your point exactly, that this does exist.
It does
so
exist.
You know me pretty well.
Yes.
What do you think for me?
Lost.
But Lost, it is just its own thing. Like, that's one story. So I haven't, like, demanded more Lost.
I don't think it's necessarily always about demanding more, though. But think about your investment in Lost, at least when it was ongoing, went far beyond just enjoying the weekly episodes.
Yeah.
You know, your investment was the participation in the fandom community that developed in the world of the story. So it's a good point, though, because we need to be clear that fandom doesn't always take place in this demand more.
Because I think that's an interesting point I want to talk about. Okay.
But it can be a bit more limited in the sense where you're content.
So you think that I was blind to Lost's errors because of my love for it?
Well, I don't know. I think that would be a different conversation, maybe. I think that...
So why would you put Lost in that category for me?
Because it transcended the quality. Eventually, your investment... And obviously, I'm trying to diagnose you here, so you can contradict me.
No, that's good.
But your investment in it became less about, are they telling a good story as time went on?
And more into
the world itself. You were invested so that whether or not they were telling a good story almost became irrelevant by the end of it. Just like with me and Wheel of Time.
Like, I just loved the Lost universe?
Yes. It was about your investment in that universe, in that story. And so whether or not they were doing a good job almost becomes an irrelevant point. And that's what I realized about myself in Wheel of Time. I didn't honestly care if he was writing a good novel or not at the end of it. I mean, if it was awful, that would have been one thing. And I want to say, when I say irrelevant, I'm maybe exaggerating for the point of emphasis. Just like, you know, if Lost had come out and they had Teletubby Week or something, you wouldn't have been so blind where, you know, it's not so irrelevant where you wouldn't have noticed something like that.
Okay.
But by and large, that, where maybe at the beginning that was important to you, I think by the time you hit seasons 4, 5, 6, your investment wasn't so much, is this actually a good story, as this is the world that I am invested in as a fan. It becomes something entirely different.
Interesting. I wonder if the listeners are right now thinking of something that they love.
Yeah.
Write into us, listeners. If you're thinking of something that you love that much, let us know. We can talk about it in some listener feedback.
Yeah. Or even like, you know, weeks where there was maybe a dull episode of Lost. I'm not saying that you would be so blind where you couldn't notice that, because I've heard you say, you know, this episode wasn't good. But I bet there's still a part of you that likes those episodes.
Because it's still developing important story
aspects.
Or
Book 10 of Wheel of Time. Terribly boring. I still like it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
All right, continuing. I'm going to take us – I do want to take us into the demand for more, but I know you're still on a roll.
Yeah, so that – there's this phenomenon of fandom, and the question that I start asking myself is this a good thing or a bad thing? Because it's very much a thing that is in existence.
You're saying, like, does it help or hinder the purpose of storytelling?
Right. You know, what is its effect on storytelling? What is its effect on those of us who are fans? You know, I know you asked this question on the Facebook page today, and I thought the responses were interesting in terms of, like, well, obviously people can take this too far where they're starting the Jedi religion and all that. Mm-hmm. And I think we can all acknowledge that. What I'm more interested in is in terms of our ability to really enjoy stories in one of those other five categories, especially the four outside of the visceral ones, where, you know, visceral, I don't think there's anything wrong with divergent entertainment in small doses, but stories, I believe that we love stories for a reason, and that reason is to draw us to truth, as we've talked about. Yeah. And so that's where those first four categories, the philosophical, mythological, allegorical, and thematic, become very important. And so my question is, does fandom really distract us from gaining from stories what we are meant, I would say, by God, to be gaining from stories,
nice,
by and large?
Good.
I think that's a fascinating question.
It is. Dive in.
So should we get to maybe a little – if that's the theory, should we talk a little application?
Yes.
So let's talk Avengers.
The Avengers. It's finally happening.
Yes.
So you promised this essay on the Sci-Fi Christian website, but you started it, never finished it. So this is it. This is the culmination of all of your thoughts.
Yes. For now.
And I
probably great more.
And I put the Avengers on in preparation for this.
Yes.
So I'll watch that while you talk.
Okay. I want to say up front, the Avengers is enormously entertaining. It's enormously well done.
Good.
So
hats off to Joss Whedon and company.
Both those are true. But why am I against Avengers?
Yes.
The reason I'm against Avengers is because what it is doing is taking stories that have the potential to be thematically rich and depth, that has the potential to be meaningful to us on a deep spiritual level. We've seen there's in my mind the argument that it's just a stupid comic book movie went right out the window with Nolan's Batman trilogy. Mm-hmm. We have seen that comic book movies, superheroes, have a chance to be something much, much more than that. What Avengers and the whole Marvel Initiative has done is taken all those stories, rip them largely of their thematic depth, and turn them into a visceral fandom experience.
Hmm.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that in and of itself, but what I think is a problem, what I have a real issue with, is that it's now becoming the standard for how stories are going to be told.
Yeah, and then this is what you were saying, is that is Avengers ruining movies?
Yes.
That was a question you were asking.
Yes. So something like Justice League, do I think a Justice League movie could be awesome? Not just in an entertaining way, but in a Nolan-esque way where it has a lot of interesting things to say? Yes. But will that happen if they follow the Avengers model? No. Because the Avengers model doesn't care about themes. Not to say they're completely absent, you know, because I don't want people writing in and be like, well, there's this theme in Thor, you know, brotherhood, you know, or something like that. I'm not saying they're completely absent. I don't think any story is completely absent of any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Or, well, maybe Dumb and Dumber or something. But, you know, most stories have at least some of that.
Friendship.
Yes. Duct taping a parakeet's head.
Loyalty.
Yes.
Yeah.
See, I mean, you can really stretch yourself and come up with some for just about anything. But it's not the point of those. You know, but the point of the Avengers isn't to tell a thematically rich story. It's to perpetuate fandom. So that's reason one why I have an issue with Avengers,
okay,
is its effect on the industry. Here's reason two. Or do you want to respond? How should we do this? You want to respond to reason one?
Do you have them fresh in your head? Like, you won't forget them?
I won't forget them.
Let's talk about its effect on the industry, because we're seeing it right now.
Yes.
So Marvel... And I don't know if you know this, but we both keep up on sci-fi news. And in some articles I've been reading, other people are becoming aware of what you brought up a year ago.
Thank you.
Which is that all film franchises feel like they have to follow this model.
Yeah.
That things are existing in this universe and there needs to be more. Star Wars, I think, is a perfect example right now because of what we already said about how it's going to have its regular movies, but then other movies that kind of bring it all together. Justice League, like you said, is going to be taking the same model as Marvel. In other ways, something started with, I think, Harry Potter, where they made each book, you know, each book had its own movie until they got to the last one, and they split the last one into two. And then Twilight followed suit, so Breaking Dawn was two. And now Hunger Games, I don't know if you know this, but Hunger Games, Catching Fire comes out this year in November, but when they get to Mockingjay, that's going to be two movies.
Yeah.
And so there is this idea and this feel in the industry like they need to be producing more content. And it can't just be story-driven because they're able to get the first book in one movie, the second book's in one movie, but also the third one needs two movies. Why is that?
Yeah.
Like, it's not just that the book's bigger or that it has more in it is what they'll try to say. It's a formula people are following now. So there's these different formulas that if you have a franchise, you have to at least make it a trilogy at minimum. And so you were saying in the last news episode, we were talking about some young adult book that now it has to come out as a trilogy because you can't just have a standalone book. And even as I'm looking around to read different books, for time reasons, sometimes I want to find a book that's just by itself, and it's hard now to find a book that exists alone.
Yep.
And so when you talk about Avengers and its effect on the industry, I think what we're going to see is more universe building, which you and I both like, but I think what you're saying is you like it as long as it's not at the expense of good storytelling.
Exactly. But here's the other part of that, and that I'm thinking of as you're talking, is that one of the dangers with fandom, you know, so if that's its effect out here, and we'll get to my second point about that in a bit, but I think there's also an effect on us, which is that as fans, and let's all be honest here, we are very easy to exploit.
Oh, yeah. The fact that you're listening to this show means that you're some sort of sci-fi super fan of something.
You know, Brandon Sanderson took over Robert Jordan for the last three Wheel of Time books. I think he did a decent job. But let's say, you know, the first one came out and it sucked. I would have read the next two.
Yeah.
I was that invested in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to get into did Lost finish well or not, but let's just say that it was universally acknowledged that the last season was terrible.
Okay.
You would have still watched, you know, at that point when it got to the last season. Even if you had watched it and said, yeah, they're completely tanking it and it sucks, you would have finished.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at the bajillion Star Wars toys out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's because fans are easy to exploit. Look at how everything gets licensed into a billion different games and, you know, spin-off things and different books. And a lot of it's marketed to kids, and that's one thing. But I'm talking about adult fans.
Mm-hmm.
We're easy to exploit.
Yeah.
You slap Lord of the Rings on something, people will buy it.
Like because Lord of the Rings Monopoly.
Exactly.
Yeah. They have countless types of Trivial Pursuit based on all these different things people are into.
Exactly.
Like, if they had a Lost Trivial Pursuit that covered all six seasons, I would buy it.
Yeah.
And there's no one that could play it with me.
Yeah. So it's not even about the game. It's the fandom experience.
Yeah, I want that.
Yeah.
Which is
entirely understandable in a fandom context, but I think it's important for us as fans to realize that can be dangerous, too, because we're basically being exploited by big companies that just want our money, and they're not actually churning out stuff because it is actually perpetuating the fandom experience for us. They're just saying these guys are suckers. They'll buy anything that we slap this label on.
So what do you think, specifically with movies? I like a lot of your thoughts you've talked about before, maybe on the air, off the air. I want you to kind of bring it all together. Movies. How did Avengers ruin movies?
Well, if Avengers existed in a vacuum, I would say that's a great movie. Lots of fun, entertaining. I'd feel about it kind of the way I feel about Die Hard.
Okay.
Fun movie. I'd be happily owning it, watching it several times, you know, and just enjoying it. But it's hard for me to enjoy because I do look at it and say, okay, look at what it's doing to Justice League. Look at what it's doing to Star Wars.
Go beyond those examples because I feel like we both have brought those up a lot. What else has it affected?
Okay. It's affected Joss Whedon.
No. Okay, go ahead. Fine. I know you feel this way, but
Now, let me explain. Look at the rest of Joss Whedon's canon. Yes, there's fandom that exists, but Buffy, very much a thematic story. Every season, every episode is diving into metaphors for explaining something deep, meaningful. Same thing with Angel, same thing with Firefly, same thing with Dollhouse. That is what he does. Yes, he exists in a fandom world.
Mm-hmm.
But he is existing in order to tell us something, meaningful stories. The Avengers model, because it is about pure fandom, took those talents, it took that ability to tell meaningful stories, and it completely chopped off that part of Joss Whedon's abilities, left it on the sidelines, and forced him into a visceral entertaining model for fandom, because that's a lot easier to produce and mm-hmm. to repeat and repeat and repeat. So I think that it is ruining movies by tying creative people like Joss Whedon into a visceral experience. You know, somebody like Michael Bay is never going to make a deep movie. Mm-hmm. So for him to exist in the fandom visceral world, whatever, we're not losing much. But when people like Joss Whedon, J.J. Abrams, you know, Ben Affleck's been thrown around for mm-hmm. some of these movies. He's a great director. Yeah. He knows how to tell meaningful stories. I don't want to see him get sucked up into the fandom machine.
Yeah.
You know, all this stuff again and again. And it's just about let's shove out as much as possible so we can build a fan world. I don't, you know, we can debate whether the motives are altruistic or whether it's greed that's motivating some of this. But whatever mm-hmm. the motives are, it's not resulting in good stories. It's taking people who have the ability to tell meaningful stories and having them produce fluff, mm-hmm. entertaining fluff, but nothing that's really meaningful to us as people experiencing stories.
Hmm. Interesting. Do you have – this is not necessarily – along the lines of things Avengers ruined.
Yes.
But just when it comes to fandom in general, do you have in your list ever any place where we're going to go when it comes to, like, conventions? And you've got the Trekkies, and you've got the anime people.
Yeah.
My sister is really into anime.
Yeah.
I almost said the anime crazy people.
They are kind of crazy.
But they're not crazy. Well, they're just really into things.
Yes.
They're just really into wearing ears.
Yes.
Have you seen that? Anime people dress up more than, well, I shouldn't say more than others, but, you know, at cons, people dress up a lot. At anime cons, almost everybody dresses up, from what I hear from my sister.
That's messed up.
And they dress up like animals. So some people, they have like...
Oh, the furries?
Is that what they're called?
Yes.
Yeah. They'll like wear ears in their head or tails that gets...
That's my friend James. Should we put him on the Sci-Fi Christian?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you outed him last week about his ex-girlfriend, so you might as well.
Hello, you're on the Sci-Fi Christian. You are live on the Sci-Fi Christian.
Well, hello. I didn't know that you were recording.
Let me see if I can plug you in. Hello.
Wow, this is such a privilege.
It's working.
We have James Marshall live from Seattle on the Sci-Fi Christian.
Hey, James, how's it going?
Pretty good. I'm just getting home from work.
Well, hey, thanks for calling in today. What we wanted to cover is fandom. Now, do you think fandom is a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's probably an okay thing that could be turned into a bad thing.
It's a very, very diplomatic answer.
Of all, so this is not us, so I can ask you this. Answer honestly, of all of the type of, you know, big fans, like they have conventions, they're really into their product, who is the craziest fan? Like, you're almost offended by them because they like their thing so much.
Who is the craziest fan that I know?
No, just what group of fans are the craziest?
Oh, football fans are pretty crazy. Well,
that's not especially fandom. We're like, this is sci-fi.
Christian, James. Sci-fi Christian.
Do you know what show you're on?
Sci-fi fans. Oh, okay. Excuse me. I know some pretty insane Trekkies.
Oh, yeah. Trekkies are insane. James, while we have you on the line, we had a little bit of controversy last episode, Matt, because we got into the sci-fi feedback segment. And I let slip something you had told me.
Wait, you're cutting out.
I'm not cutting out. We're just fine.
James, have you heard that episode yet where you're mentioned?
Uh-oh. Oh, I guess we were cutting out. We were cutting out.
I think he just didn't want us to talk about his ex-girlfriend again.
Oh. Yeah, he said his ex-girlfriend was proof that demons can physically manifest.
Oh, it was fun to have a little call-in.
Yeah.
We should do this more often, I guess.
Yeah, he can call in anytime.
So all you... Wow, I didn't even know we could plug in phones like that.
I didn't know either. Wow. I just figured we'd give it a try.
That's excellent. Let's say right now, we're going to have, in 2013, the first ever call-in episode.
Oh, yeah.
We'll give out your phone number.
No, that's a bad idea.
They can Skype in.
Yes.
And we'll have our first ever call-in interactive episode this year, 2013.
Yeah.
Okay, so he said Trekkies. I was talking about anime people. And I said, again, I just want to cover ourselves. My sister is big into anime, so I'm not trying to pick on somebody, but I feel like I can pick on them because my family's into it.
Yeah.
So they're really into it. I looked up some others. You had mentioned the furries.
Yes.
Yep, they're here. Brown coats. You know who the brown coats are?
Yes. Firefly.
Do you know who...
Don't confuse them with the brown shirts.
Do you know who the Sherlockians are?
No, who are the Sherlockians?
Do you know who the Whovians are?
I think I could figure that one out.
Doctor Who? Yeah. Do you know... This is the last one I'll ask. Do you know who the Bronies are?
Oh, yeah.
What?
Grown men who love My Little Pony.
Yes! This is weird.
It's messed up.
My Little... It's called fans... Or Bronies are fans of My Little Pony. Friendship is magic.
Yeah, that's messed up.
That's the newest version of My Little Pony. Why are people into My Little Pony right now?
I don't know. My kids like it.
Have you watched Friendship is Magic?
No.
It's on Netflix. Should we do a Brony episode?
No.
Yes.
No.
2013. Is he calling back?
I'm going to try and get him back. So, because I wanted him to defend himself. Because I quoted him. He didn't want to be quoted. So I'm going to try and get him back.
Okay.
So we're calling him up now. Sometimes he answers and swears at me. So be ready to beep.
Does he really?
Oh, yeah.
I might edit this episode a little bit. Chop it up.
Your call has been forwarded.
Oh, right. Should we leave him a message?
Yeah, why not? I don't think, though, that he's picking us up through the microphones. I think it's coming through.
Yeah, it's coming through there.
Yeah.
Please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up.
Don't edit this episode. This is a great episode. Hey, James.
Hey, James. It's me, Matt Anderson.
And Ben DiBono.
We're here from the Sci-Fi Christian.
You're still on the air right now.
We just wanted to have you call back in and talk more about fandom with us, so whenever you have a chance.
And we wanted to give you a chance to defend yourself and set the record straight about the comments I quoted you on in the last episode. He claims his battery is dying. He just texted me. I think that is a total lie.
I don't believe. Because he actually... I actually owed him a message back. He Facebooked me and thanked me for trying to defend him when you read that. So
that's hysterical.
Sorry, James. I didn't get back to you.
Yes. He gets
I'm the
worried.
Worst at emailing people back. I hope all I know, the fans know
he'll
that.
Email you in like 9 months.
Yeah.
Well, should we get back to our fandom discussion?
Yes.
Should we just keep him on the line?
Nah.
Okay.
So, yeah, this episode is weird, huh?
No, this is a great episode.
All right, take it to the next place.
So we talked about fandom. We talked about is it good or bad? Crazy fans. Is Avengers ruining fandom? I think we can start moving towards the wrap-up, Matt. What do you think?
Oh, wait.
You know,
wait, no, not the wrap up. I want to talk about the demand for more.
Okay, that's demand for more.
Like sequels.
Sequels.
So we talked about how books will often have trilogies, but if a movie does well at the box office at all, it's automatically assumed there's going to be a sequel, and you do have people wanting more in that world. And like you were talking about earlier, I would right now love if Lost would produce novels that continue the stories, or even graphic novels that continue the stories.
Yeah.
I want more from that universe. And this is exactly the point you were making earlier, which is I am invested in that world that the story has created.
Yeah.
And I want more from that. And with Star Wars, you're going to have people go to all of the different movies they have, no matter how many spinoffs there are.
Yep.
You are going to see them. I'm going to see them.
I am.
And because we're not necessarily demanding more, but we love more still.
Right.
But
here's why I've been against it. Because I want the stories that I invest my time in and my energy in to be meaningful stories. And too often fandom, when it becomes about more, meaningfulness gets left on the sidelines. Mm-hmm. This is what started the whole shorter seasons demand on my part, a couple years ago, was looking at, I think it was in relation to Fringe, saying this could be a really good show, but there's so much filler in there. Why is that? Because people are demanding these 22, 25 episode seasons. You know, if Fringe had had 13 episode seasons, I think it could have been an awesome show.
Yeah.
As it was, it just went too all over the map because people demanded more. In fact, I think one of Lost's most brilliant moves was cutting down the length of their last few seasons to shorter seasons so that they could focus on the actual story and not on the filler.
Yeah, and somebody, I think it was Benedict Cumberbatch, had compared it to this desire for more as like children who want more candy and don't really know what they're doing to themselves. There is something wrong with us continually wanting more from the people. But as long as we're still paying for it, the studios and the book publishers are going to keep on producing it as long as we are giving into it.
That's right. So don't. I think the moral of the story is it's okay to be a fan, but we have a responsibility to the future of stories and our beloved sci-fi fantasy genres to stop demanding crap.
Before we wrap up, though, I need to admit, I like more. I'm part of the problem, if it is a problem. If we're saying it's a problem, which I don't know if we've definitively said that.
I am saying that in small quantities, not a problem, but it has become a problem.
I think we're going to have to turn it to the listeners for you guys to decide. Is this a problem based on what we've just said? Let us know at...
feedback@thescifichristian.com.
Or you could call us at...
612-421-21-SFC. Or just call my number and we'll get you on live on the air.
Or you could always go to Facebook, like us there,
yeah.
Enter our contest. You can follow us on Twitter.
All sorts of places.
All sorts of ways. Okay, Ben, take us home.
So, what do you think, Matt? You've heard my opinion. I'm not necessarily saying fandom's wrong. I'm not necessarily saying more is always wrong. But I think that the overall result of fandom has been negative when it comes to telling meaningful stories. Would you agree?
I mean, I feel like I'm leaning towards fandom is taken away from the powerfulness of a story.
Yes.
A story's ability to tell thematically rich tales.
Yes.
But as I'm saying that, I know, and I just admitted it, I know that I am a person who likes more as well. Like, I do like sequels to movies that I like, and I do want more in certain universes, and I love what Marvel is doing. Yeah. I love Phase 1, and I like Phase 2, and I do feel a little bit, maybe almost stressed out about the fact that they're already talking about Phase 3, and we haven't even entered Phase 2 yet.
Yes.
Stressed out isn't the right phrase exactly, but it's starting to wear thin, maybe. That it's so much of, I don't know. So I like world building. I like serialized stories. So I tend to side with the fanboys.
Yeah.
But I can see that stories are suffering.
Can I draw an analogy
for
you? You're the guy who hears about child labor sweatshops in third world countries, says that sucks, and then heads off to the mall to go buy Nikes.
Thanks, Ben.
Who is the wild-haired, crazy person standing outside the store selling Nikes, demanding that everyone else boycott while everyone just walks past me and says, what the hell is his problem? Okay. Well, that's not a swear.
I'm still going to beep it out.
Okay.
All right. So,
would you agree with that analogy?
I mean, not exactly. I don't think I could morally feel right about agreeing with your analogy completely. But yes. I can see sort of what you're saying.
Yes. Yes.
So I could see if it's not an allegory, but more of like a supposition.
Yeah.
Then maybe.
There you go.
All right, Ben. Well, should we go? You know what we should do before we leave this topic completely? We should do some listener feedback on what the listeners said on our Facebook page. So here we go.
It's a trap.
There's two main people that really wrote back. So you take Cristiano, I'll take Brandon.
I gotta get it up.
Okay, I'll take Cristiano. Cristiano says, idolatry is obviously bad. I don't equate fandom with idolatry, but I think that fandom can lead to idolatry. For example, I consider myself a fan of Spider-Man, but my identity is based on God, not Peter Parker. I'm also a fan of you too, but I don't consider the words of Bono more than the words of God. Do you think that fandom is always equal to idolatry? Ben, what do you think?
No, not all. In fact, I think that that's an interesting conversation to have. I guess we kind of went in a different direction with it than that. But no, I don't. I think Cristiano's exactly right.
Good. You want to take Brandon's?
It is both. Fandom can be good in healthy doses. I would consider watching and reading things you enjoy and talking to other like-minded people about it, like we do here, healthy, when that is not the only thing that you do. However, it can be bad when it becomes a person's identity. The time to start being concerned would be when they start referring to themselves by their Jedi name or their WoW character, WoW of course being World of Warcraft, or when their fandom is all they talk about and the line between reality and fictional franchise becomes blurred. It's bad when their fandom becomes their religion, unless your fandom is Jesus. Mm-hmm. This sounds like a lead-in topic to the topic I proposed in my first email to you guys about religions generated from sci-fi franchises like Jediism.
This actually convicted me, because if you think back to when Lost was on, it was basically my conversation opener with everyone I met. Like, I based if I could be friends with people, not like I wouldn't be friends with people if they didn't like Lost, but if they did like Lost, now we have something.
Yes. And in fact, I remember one time you told me, When I found out you liked Lost, yeah. I knew we'd be good friends.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Yes,
all right, that's a quote
like
from me.
That's like a direct quote.
This is what Brandon just said that got me thinking about that. Yeah, where their fandom is all they can talk about, and the line between reality and fictional franchises become blurred. I never like thought the island was real, but I did talk
you
about it.
Might be.
I did talk about it pretty extensively. Yes. I mean, I did have the Lost Report with Matt Anderson.
Well, that was good though. We wouldn't be here without the Lost Report with Matt Anderson.
So. Yeah, good thoughts there from Brandon, and he has talked to me off the air about finally doing that religions based on sci-fi franchises episode. I think we're going to bring him on that episode since he kind of came up with that 2 years ago.
Yeah. Is Cubby going to be on that one?
Yeah, I think we should get Cubby on.
Okay.
Do you have anything else you want to say about this topic, or can I move on to different listener feedback?
I'm ready for story time.
Oh, not quite yet.
Not quite?
No. Mike Poteet has responded to last week's awesome episode about sci-fi, top five sci-fi Bible adventures.
Excellent.
He wrote, Matt, your Daniel pitch is awesome. And Ben, your Samson idea is brilliant. I would pay good money to see either of those.
Which one was the Samson one again?
Yours is the one where they had the brain.
Oh, yeah, the nanobots, yes. Yeah. Not the brain implants.
Yeah. He said, the whole discussion reminds me, have either of you seen Kings, the TV series that ran on NBC for less than a season a few years back?
I haven't, though. I've been meaning to watch it.
Is it on Netflix?
No.
Okay. I've been wanting to watch it as well, but it's not on Netflix, so I have no place to view it on. Maybe it's on Hulu. I know it was on Hulu a while back.
I don't know.
I have Hulu Plus.
It has Ian McShane in it.
He says, it's not exactly sci-fi, but it's an alternate present day, slightly futuristic update of the saga of Saul and David from the Hebrew Bible, well, also the Old Testament. For example, Goliath is the name of an advanced tank weapon system that David brings down single-handedly. I still haven't seen the whole series and really should since there's so little of it. There's 13 episodes, just for the record. But what I saw, I liked, and I think it got generally good reviews. Very biblically literate scripts and strong performances. And then, oh man, he finally speaks. Finally, somebody speaks up about this Jesus is a clone idea.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to put you in your place.
If Jesus and the Spirit are clones of the Father, they are subordinate to him, and that is heresy.
Yep.
So I think that is finally proven that Jesus is not a clone of the Father. So I think I've been proven wrong once again here on my very own show.
It's okay. It's okay. It happens to the best of us. Well, not me, but it's a little prideful moment for me.
Here we go for the last segment of the day.
It's sci-fi Christian story time.
Well, then, what do you got?
Today's story is called Even Batman Hates Batman Live.
Oh, really? Okay, good.
Several months ago, I was shopping around on Amazon.com. I came across a box set of the show Batman Beyond.
Yes.
Which you, of course...
Did you buy it?
I did buy it.
I didn't know you owned that.
Yeah, it's an updated version. Well, it's not updated, but it takes place... Batman Beyond takes place in kind of a futuristic Gotham City. Bruce Wayne is retired. He's an old guy who walks around with a cane. Mm-hmm. And he trains young Terry McGinnis to be the new Batman.
Yes.
So much of the show is about their relationship and all of that. I still haven't finished the show because I watch it with my kids every so often.
That is great.
Yes. So we've been watching Batman Beyond. And I think we have about half of the last season to go.
Okay.
We are watching one this weekend, I believe, on Saturday afternoon.
This is so good.
And something very interesting happened at the beginning of the episode. And I think that as I play this clip from the beginning of the episode, you're going to find that it sounds maybe slightly familiar. So this is how this episode of Batman Beyond opens. As the YouTube video loads.
I am vengeance. I am the night. I am Batman.
Batman. Batman.
There is a song the good folks sing.
Song the good folks sing.
Batman. About a hero on the wing.
Hero on the wing.
Oh my gosh, this is awesome.
Batman.
I am Gotham's darkest night, the villain's darkest fright. Turn on the signal light
for Batman.
Batman.
Now I'm going to pause it there for a second.
Okay.
I'm going to set up the next part of this clip.
So in Batman Beyond, they actually had Batman Live before.
This is like early 2000s.
Wow.
So this is a Batman play that's taking place. What you just heard is basically a Batman musical taking place in Gotham City. And in the stands are sitting Bruce Wayne, and Terry McGinnis, who you will hear shortly, with Bruce Wayne. You'll be able to tell which voice his is because it sounds older.
Okay.
And it'll be very interesting to see what his reaction to this musical is. So it continues on.
That crowd loved it far more than ours did.
Yeah, big time.
You hate me, don't you?
Lighten up, it's your birthday.
Don't remind me.
Good work, Cape Crusader. Once again, you've saved our fair city from those vile miscreants.
They were no problem, Commissioner. For as we all know, criminals are a superstitious, cowardly lot. They plan and plot, but they always get caught. Their evil schemes all come to naught. A superstitious, cowardly lot.
Come on, it took me weeks to get tickets for this show. It's Shway.
It's Schwarbage.
And at that point,
he stands up and walks away.
Excuse me. One side, please. Move!
A superstitious, cowardly lot. They plan and plot, but they always get caught. Their evil schemes all come to naught. A superstitious, cowardly lot.
Wow.
So, what you didn't get in the audible version of that is Bruce Wayne, very unhappy, stands up and storms out.
Mm-hmm.
Of Batman Live.
What we should have done.
What we should have done.
Yeah, so if you want to know what we thought about Batman Live, go back to episode 83, where we give our complete reaction to one of the worst things I've ever seen in my whole life.
It won best episode of the year, didn't it?
It was tied for best episode of the year. Our reaction was so strong.
Yeah, it was terrible. So this is one of the most prophetic things I've ever seen, and I needed to, because of course, again, this is filmed in early 2000s.
Yeah.
So even Batman hates Batman Live. We should have learned from his example and skipped it altogether.
I wish I had seen that episode sooner.
Well, Matt.
Well.
This has been good.
Good episode, Ben. Good analysis. I owe you.
Thank you, sir.
I owe it to you this time because you pretty much took the full brunt of that research. I like what you had to say. So, again, fans, let us know what you think about this specific topic. Is fandom good? Is it bad? What did we miss? Is there some sort of fan subculture that we didn't talk about that we should have made fun of?
Yeah.
Write us at feedback@thesci-fi-christian.com, or you can call us at 612-4121-SFC. Well, that's all from here. I'm Matt Anderson.
I'm Betty Burrow.
We are the Sci-Fi Christian, signing off.
And your responses will be read on a future feedback episode featuring Matt Anderson and Cubby.
Thank you.